Thanks for listening to the Drummer's Weekly Groovecast. You can contact the show at twitter.com/DW Groovecast and through Facebook at facebook.com/Drummer's Weekly Groovecast.
Good evening.
I am warning you right now, if you touch my drums, I will stab you in the neck with a knife.
Ain't a fucking. Ain't a fucking.
Mom!
Take it easy. Lower it.
I'm not gonna lower it. I have to do this now.
I don't mind you playing it, but lower it.
Well, we gonna straighten out?
No, we had a problem. I mean, we tried to do everything we could.
What do you mean?
Well, you know what I mean.
Next!
Little trouble there. You're rushing.
Yeah, well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
Yeah!
John, it's that time of year again.
What time?
Best of 2017 time.
Oh, you're going to cut up some of my blunders and rambling and like incoherent crap.
You know what you discover when you go back and listen to some of those old ones is that how in the world did we get this far? It's painful, brother.
You know how I did it.
How'd you do it?
I'm smart enough not to go back and listen. Yeah. You're a masochist.
The thing I think is very charming about it is that we have some of our listeners that talk about, man, some of the old shows, those are the classics.
Oh, yeah, we made everybody feel better about themselves.
Man, I'm telling you, my hats go off to the power listeners, the ones that have stuck with us from the beginning, because it is painful. To go back and listen to some of the early ones. Everything from the production to, I feel like there was a lot of times that I was talking to just be there. I was happy to be there, John.
Well, I think you were.
Just glad to be here, buddy.
I think you were. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, I guess that means that we're beyond jaded now. We're coming up on, dude, we're closing in on 100 episodes.
No way.
We're closing in on 100.
That's insane. I can't even believe that.
We're going to have to start retreading topics.
Yeah. You know, I always thought, like, I'm glad we don't do this every week.
You know what? I'm going to just stand by there and say, you're right. I'm going to agree with you.
That you got a little ambitious?
Well,
we're going to be talking about those drumming shoes at some point.
I was going to say that, and if you think that's ambitious, wait till you hear what I've got cooked up for 2018.
Oh boy.
How's your life been, buddy?
It's been interesting.
Oh, I know. You've got an interesting gig you want to tell us about. I think this is a good, I've done one. And the thing that's so funny about it is I've actually done a couple of these gigs before, but it's so off the wall. It's so bizarre. I think you need to tell everybody about it.
Yeah, definitely different. In a lot of ways, a friend of mine is teaching at a college south of Atlanta, and
I think it's safe to say you can use the mafia terminology. A friend of ours.
A friend of ours. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, he is a friend of ours.
He is. That's what I'm saying.
He said, "Hey, man, you know, we have an assignment for the students. They got to write a song, and we're gonna make, you know, they have to write a lead sheet too, and then." Some other friends of ours, bass player and a guitar player, did the ride down, and we get there, and basically, I think there were 12 or 13 songs, and they run the chart up.
Mm-hmm.
There's no tempo markings, no, you know, idea for like groove, anything like that, and it's just kind of like, you look at our friend, and he had a little bit of time with them,
yeah,
in flushing out things or checking their, you know, their charts, and they were just lead sheets. So, you know, you kind of just stare at him like, you know, well, what's the vibe? And he's like, oh, yeah, it's sort of like this, and here's, and I'll count it off. Okay, cool. And so that's it. You're reading down a chart with, as a drummer, especially with chords,
yeah,
you know, and you have to just stare at each bar like, okay, I know where I'm at, and no figures, nothing, and you just, so what you have to do is use every bit of instinct and pulling from all of your experience to say, okay, what's going to make sense? And it's kind of like a gun to your head session. You're going to do 12 songs today and ready, go. And it was pretty bizarre. But two things I got out of it. One is, when you're surrounded by guys who have the experience that everyone had, it came together way better than you thought.
Than it should have. Because if they would have had their peers playing as the rhythm section, rough. It would have been a disaster.
Yeah. And the other thing that's interesting, too, is not only the students, but the faculty involved as well were just like, oh, this is amazing. And you know, we're so just locked into like, man, I want to find the perfect part and the perfect feel and the perfect tempo. And you just didn't have time to do any of that.
Yeah.
I mean, four songs in, too, where I was like, man, you know, do you want me to grab tempos, like have my, you know, some kind of reference? And nah, we don't have time for that. I'm like, okay. And then he's like, yeah, you'll just count them off. I'm like, no, I won't.
John, I would like to.
I won't be counting them off.
I would like to reenact what happened this last week. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to be you. I want you to be John. And then I'm going to be student, arranger, composer.
Okay.
And then I'm going to hand you the chart, and then you're going to ask me what you want. So, oh, here you go. Here's the chart, man.
Oh, hey, cool, man. So do you, you know, you got an idea of the feel, like where I might want to come, where you want me to come in, anything like that?
Yeah, man. Listen, okay. It's pretty simple. Okay. On the first half of this tune, I want you to think in terms of like a Civil War beat, right? Think in terms of like, I guess you might want to be on the battlefield, right? And I want a very kind of a lonesome morning kind of a drum cadence. And then when you get to this next section, man, I want you to think more in terms of like Arcade Fire, right? And then that last section, we're going to go to a Purdy Shuffle. And tempo-wise, 300 BPM. Here we go. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yep. And that, you know, to be honest with you, the students really, I think they were afraid to suggest anything.
Yeah.
And I was sad about that because I'd rather get that than nothing.
Yeah, it's like 19 and 20-year-olds, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other funny thing is, in those situations, and I will just speak for myself, I'm sure many of us, but, you know, I have this storm of insecurity, frustration, kind of like anger, like, you know, this could be better. I could have more preparation. And then also like this, like almost apathy too. So it's this mad storm of like crazy emotions and that, because it's just so absurd. But, you know, at the end of the day, man.
You went into this gig beyond blind. And so, I mean, you had no idea what you were going to get.
Nothing.
I'm sure you probably maybe even had in the back of your mind this terrifying thought that you're going to have some overachieving kid that was going to come up and give you a drum chart that was written out, you know, like Dave Weckl style grooves and stuff. You know, you didn't know that there was going to be possibly something that's going to happen in the back of your mind. Because, like I said before, I did that as a student a few times when I was in school, mm-hmm. where, you know, you would either be playing for an arranging class or possibly a composition class. And really, there's only about two or three categories that this stuff's going to fall into. And it's kind of a sliding scale of like, out of a class of, like you said, 14 or 15, you're going to have one or two that's like, this is actually really good. Something could happen with it. And then you're going to have seven or eight that's just kind of like, you know, they're trying. And then like, you're going to have four or five.
They
it's
met
like,
their assignment.
Yeah, you're going to have four or five are like, these kids are getting out of the music business, 100%.
Well, you know, it's even, you know, talk about, you know, more than blind. Like, for example, you know, I just was, what kid am I going to bring? I have no idea, you know, and it's like, you always live in fear of like, you bring some nice pop sounding kid or something like that. And then it's all of a sudden it's all bebop tunes or something, you know, and you're like, wait, what? But I was even struggling with that. And then of course, pretty typical of academic settings. It was in a recital hall where, mm-hmm. you know, I looked at the drums and they were probably too loud. So that challenge too, like in that storm I mentioned earlier, that whole part of it was flying around and smacking me in the between the eyes too. So it was crazy, man, crazy. And you know what? I went in with some of my best friends and did it, which yeah. makes a huge difference. I probably would have been really a mess if it would have been like with some guys I didn't really know.
Yeah.
That would have been hard. So the blessing in that. And also just, man, you realize you got a lot to pull from. If you've been doing this a while and you can make sense of it. And we kind of make fun of sometimes like the Nashville thing, like play the dumbest part you can think of and just knock it out. And
yeah.
And there was a perfect example of, yeah, common denominator, the bare bones, what's going to work, stay out of the way. And, you know, my experience really helped in that regard.
John, do you know why they didn't ask any other faculty to perhaps do that?
I think a lot of it had to do with the majority of stuff had more of a singer, songwriter, pop sort uh-huh. of thing. And I just kind of get the impression that there's not really, either in this school, I don't think they're the applied teachers, the, individual instrument teachers are readily available.
Yeah.
Like maybe they come in for a couple of days and
part-time.
Then they're gone. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think also, you know, the strength of said faculty members might have may lie elsewhere. That's just my guess.
You mean there's not a hot oboe d'amour part on a lot of those charts that you were given?
Well, yeah, there were, but you couldn't hear him because that drummer was too loud.
You're stepping on the viola da gamba.
So she went home.
You know,
stormed out of there.
Something I want to touch on that is it sticks in my craw regarding music schools is you mentioned the recital hall / music auditorium. It seems to me like the scenario that you were just discussing, that this recital hall or auditorium was set for like these very acoustic, small chamber ensemble, solo yeah, type
definitely.
Thing, right?
Minimal PA.
Exactly. But dare I say that 2/3, if not more, of all music schools, their bread and butter as far as like funding and like churning students out and recruiting them in come from ensemble type things. And I'm not talking about orchestral ensemble. I'm talking about like rock, pop, jazz,
big band.
Yeah. And normally those type of ensembles just don't sound very good in those rooms.
Horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's other than the big universities, most of the small liberal arts
yeah.
schools, like I think there's probably a bigger auditorium on that campus and that might have served mm-hmm. that better. But of course, then we had a small audience, mm-hmm. you know, it was right after Thanksgiving. I don't even know if the students were back yet or not, but maybe they were, but nonetheless, I agree that I think schools need to think and, you know, as things go on, they're going to be more contemporary. They're going to be more modern and current and, you know, drum sets and miking and all mm-hmm. of this stuff. And to the credit of the engineer down there who I've worked with in the past on some sessions, you know, he had his hands full for sure. And he did a really good job of making some things work. And, you know, the monitor situation was a real challenge. And, you know, we figured out someone actually had a powered speaker they could chain.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, that's another collective experience-driven solution-finding scenario in that a bunch of pros are going to figure out how to make this work and get through it. Whereas if you just talk about just running blind on charts with nothing, no information other than bars, you know, you're taking a ton of people out of the game already. And then you're talking about a younger player. Maybe he can't play down, but with intensity, you know, or you have a great player, but he's not a strong reader and all that. So you're narrowing the field. And then as far as people who can do it, but then also, you know, above and beyond just the performance, reading a room, we've talked about volume, how it can work, and, you know, muffling down a snare drum, all these little things that from the experiences of playing 1,000 different rooms and 1,000 different volumes and all that, I was able to find a comfort zone, thank God, as challenging as it was, and being able to draw from the past, man, like, I was thankful for that because, again, I go back to that storm. I'm my own worst enemy, man. I can make a mountain out of a molehill in a minute over such things like that. And, you know, chilling out, taking a breath, figuring it out. So it was a strange gig, but my new theory, of course, as you know, is nobody died.
Right. I think you and I might have the market cornered on strange Monday gigs. Mm-hmm. I won't get into mine that I had, but did you take your own set down to play?
I did. Yeah. I took he said singer songwriter was going to be the bulk of it, so I took an old Ludwig kit that was kind of mellow and worked, and I took a ton of cymbals just because you never know.
John, I am virtually certain that school had a drum set that's down there, but I know for a fact it would have not had fresh, minty Aquarian drum heads on it.
Look at you.
I've got to mention it, folks.
You do.
The time is nigh. The time is nigh. You must register to win a free set of Aquarian drum heads of your choice. That's right, folks. I don't want you to forget. In honor of our Mike Johnston show that we published a few weeks ago, once again, Mike, I know you're listening to this. I'm going to say it's my favorite show. I loved it. I had a great time. Our good buddy, Chris Brady, out at Aquarian, stepped up to the plate and says, you guys are not doing this show without doing a giveaway. And to register to win a free set of your choice of Aquarian drum heads, get yourself over to iTunes, to the Drummer's Weekly Groovecast homepage. Leave us a short written review. It has to be a written review so that we can use your iTunes handle to draw out of a hat so that you can win a free set of Aquarian drum heads of your choice. Now, second prize is a free set of Aquarian drum kit tools. Now, you guys have heard me sing the praises of the Aquarian kick patch. That is included in this set of drum kit tools, as well as like a set of T-tabs and a set of snare tabs and power dots. And those are all good little tchotchkes that you can just throw in your trap case or throw into a cymbal bag, because they will come in handy, handy, handy on any gig or studio session. So head over to iTunes, leave us a short written review, and in a couple of weeks, we're going to draw the winners. And we'll let you guys know well ahead of time the actual date that we're going to do it. But get over there now and leave a short written review. Is that it, John? I feel like I left something out on that.
I don't think so.
Yeah. So we got the two prizes. We're going to do a drawing coming up, blah, blah, blah. We'll let them know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Man, get on it. You can get them. They got a ton of great choices and heads, too. You're going to find your vibe for sure.
Absolutely. John, let's forge forward. And let's talk about this potentially messy topic that we're going to do a good job on.
It's already messy just thinking about it.
It is. But, you know, the first thing I want to throw out there is this topic. We're going to call it the politics of drumming, because I thought it would be witty that reminded me of that old 80s tune, The Politics of Dancing.
Ooh, feeling right. I'm feeling good.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Oh, showing our age.
There was a time when I looked like I could have been in that band.
Oh, who was it? Who was the band that did Politics of Dancing? Was it one of those British?
Is it like, it was somebody like kind of along the lines of.
Somebody will let us know for sure.
Yeah, I don't.
Was it like Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark or something like that?
No, but there's about 10 bands that fit that bill.
It
could have been any of them. They all had sampled drum machine 80s gated sounds.
You know who did? Boy, I'm going to go off on a tangent really quickly, but I heard this on the radio the other day, and it's absolutely astounding. You remember that old Spandau Ballet ballad called True?
I remember the sax solo, or lack thereof.
It was the 80s version of Baker Street. That sax solo.
That's a good call.
It is. Yeah. Well, this is what I want you to notice. And everybody, the plays on YouTube are going to skyrocket after I say this. The loudest thing on that track is the bass drum. Oh my God. It's the bass drum is earth shatteringly loud on that ballad.
That's not good.
It's weird, man. It's absolutely bizarre. So go check out the bass drum on Spandau Ballet True. Now back to our show. So, John.
God, I hope a lot of people don't listen to that song.
The word politics almost immediately has a negative connotation, doesn't it?
You think? Right now?
Well, what I wanted to say is the way we want to kind of approach this topic is not necessarily all from the negative standpoint.
Mm-mm.
Because politics doesn't have to be negative. It really doesn't, and it's a vital part of doing what anybody does in any profession. It really is. In other words, it's not one of these things that has to be an under-the-table sort of topic. Because if you do it ethically, it's a good thing.
Yep, I agree.
It absolutely is. It's a great thing if you do it ethically. And that's what we want to talk about. We want to talk about the ethical aspects of this. And so, John, I wanted to start out with just a brief story. And
okay.
It's one that you've heard before and probably most people have heard before, but it certainly addresses...
Or lived it.
or lived it. Yeah. But it certainly addresses one of the topics. And one of the topics sort of inside of politics is like gossiping and backbiting. So I would like to do a brief monologue from the life of a drummer.
The year 2000.
So two drummers were at a little get-together one time. They hadn't seen each other in like a year or so. And they go up and exchange pleasantries, and one guy goes, "Man, I haven't seen you in a long time. How are things going?" And the other guy goes, "Man, it's just been a tremendous year. It's just been great." He says, "Man, I played on like a number one hit song." The guy goes, "Oh, really? I didn't hear anything about that." And he goes, "Yeah, it was awesome, man." He goes, "I went out on tour, man, for like 6 months with one of the highest grossing tours in the country." And the other guy goes, "Wow, man, I didn't hear anything about that." And he goes, "Yeah, I did that." And he goes, "And when I got back off the road, man, I went to the studio and I recorded this great movie soundtrack, one of the highest grossing movies of the year." The guy goes, "Man, I where have I been? I didn't hear anything about that." And he goes, "And also, man, I landed on faculty, man, at this great school where I'm teaching these high-level students. It's just wonderful." And the guy goes, "Man, I had no idea. Congratulations." Then the guy goes, "Well, it wasn't all great, man." He goes, "I actually went into the recording studio to do this one session, man. I just couldn't make it happen, man. I messed up on the reading the charts, and I couldn't get the feel right. It just didn't work out." The guy goes, "Oh, yeah, I heard about that."
Man, that is like real life trauma story.
I hope I had everybody on pins and needles on that one.
That is really true, though.
It is, isn't it?
I mean, it's like, come on, man. You just harping on all the, you know, the negative. Ugh.
It's one of those things that we've talked about time and time again, is that we are hardwired as human beings to like make a mountain out of the molehill, like
right.
You're talking about, like when we have a negative experience, a lot of times that is amplified tenfold to kind of go back to our caveman days, to where we don't want to make that mistake again that ended up with a saber-toothed tiger jumping out from behind a bush
right.
to kill us. And our feeble peanut minds still respond to these non-life-threatening situations the same way it did years and years ago.
Well, there's kind of along the same lines of like, you read a review of a hotel and there's 90 glowing reviews that one person just hated it, and that's what you're focused on.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, that's not rational. That's not, you know, we all are. It's like, we just are. Oh, I'm going to be the guy that gets the bed bugs, or I'm going to be the guy that has a dirty bathroom. Like, you know, they have glowing reviews, endless glowing reviews. You're just zeroed in on the red flag.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Absolutely. It absolutely is the case. And the purpose of this show, like we talked about at the beginning, is to talk about our real life scenarios that we've had when we've lived through some of these, and also kind of put them in a different direction to where, again, we don't want to highlight all of just the negative aspects of this. We want to talk about the positive aspects of it and how you can make the proverbial lemonade out of the lemons. Because you do. You absolutely have to play politics, which leads me into philosophy, Phil, here for 1 second.
All right. Well, I'm like a rabbit trail guy today.
Well, I run into these little things from time to time.
It's like you didn't look at the outline.
John, Plato once said, one of the penalties of refusing to participate in politics is that you end up being governed by your inferiors.
Oh, I can hear the
Facebook is there groaning going on right now? Because, dude, you know that's the case.
That's
you
true.
You absolutely know that's the case. And then that starts the backbiting. That starts the gossip. That starts the negativity. That starts the rumors. Yes. And that's what we want to avoid. And the first part of this, let's use a term that already has, in a lot of circles, negative connotations. And networking, that's the term, is a lot of times also referred to as politicking. I don't necessarily like to think of it in those terms because, again, it's automatically a negative. Because when people think of networking, you think that you're out trying to get something from somebody.
Right, trying to get over on people.
Get over on the man. Right, is kind of what it is. I'm going to try to get in there, and I'm going to get this.
And there's
this
plenty of people who network with that intention.
Yeah,
but it doesn't have to be that way.
Well, I used to have a bad attitude, in my opinion, as far as like the way that I used to approach this stuff from time to time. Because when you go out in a new setting, whether it's a new city or if you're trying to meet some new people inside a city you've been at for a while, one of the things that I used to have a kind of a weird attitude toward, man, is I used to kind of overstep what I would say would be the organic, natural curve of getting to know somebody, you know, from a standpoint of like, hey, hey, how are you? I play with these guys and this is what I do. And, you know, I like what you guys are doing. Then over a period of time, it just organically ends up developing into a friendship, maybe a working relationship. And I used to be over aggressive to the standpoint of like, hey, man, this is who I am and I want to work with you. Now, in some settings, there are some people I think that can appreciate that. But I think in a lot of settings, man, that thing works against you. And I think it worked against me from time to time. Because it might have been a little bit of bravado and it might have been a little bit of like, look, let's cut through the crap. And in so many ways, I'm not here to make friends. I'm here to make business, so to speak. And I have since then kind of stepped back from that. Well, a long time ago, I stepped back from that. And I am in a much more organic friend-making sort of thing. And I've just learned that over a period of time, for me, it works significantly better. I don't ever try to force myself into, like, sit-in jam session situations.
Mm-hmm.
If I feel like it needs to happen and I want to play, then I'll do it. But I don't want to jam something in there and make it forced.
Yeah, it's just, man, I'm kind of the opposite. I've never, ever been able to go and sell myself on any level. And you know, when you're kind of implying that that aggressiveness can sometimes come back and bite you or your reputation, I think, and sometimes the opposite approach can be as problematic too. You know, you're not putting yourself out there at all,
right?
Or making any effort to find new people and new players and new avenues and all that, that it can be equally as devastating to your goals. You know, whereas it, when you were hyper aggressive, there might be some people who are like, man, that dude's just too over the top. And then, you know, if you're out of sight, out of mind.
Right.
And there's also, you know, there's also, man, you know, I think sometimes people that can be really aggressive sometimes lose sight of the fact that, you know, they might have a drummer.
Oh, there you go. There you go. Because then you start getting to that whole thing of like, is this guy kind of sniffing around my territory?
Absolutely. And oftentimes they are.
Yeah.
You know, and there's some people that just don't care.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you talk about this, not where you're at now with this organic thing and everything takes care of itself and you're working and it's all good and it's all based on friendships and trust and experience and, you know, past gigs and all that, reputation, you can end up burning yourself with being completely blind mm-hmm. to the fact that, you know, maybe someone else is doing this gig or working with this guy. And if he hears you doing that or catches wind of it, you know, boy, it can really blow up in your face.
Yeah, that whole topic of like what we were talking about, snaking gigs is what we would call it. That kind of thing, man, is it's beyond frowned upon, you know?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we all know that in this brotherhood of being a professional musician that getting any work is a major deal, much less than getting the work and then thinking that you're doing a good job and then having somebody that you either know or don't know come up and try to, like, work something behind your back. You know, and boy, and then if you want to get to the levels of snakiness, man, you get into that whole thing of like guys that will do gigs for nothing or next to nothing because of that.
I'll tell you what, man, I had, you know, recently, as you know, I walked away from something that was steady.
I remember.
And I had to really get out of my comfort zone and connect with some people. And I did it with people I know well. I did it with people that absolutely know my intentions are nothing other than, hey, I'm just letting you know where I'm at. I've made this change. If you ever need someone, please keep me in mind. I never, ever would approach someone I don't know under these circumstances. But I did it with 10 people.
Mm-hmm.
And as you well know, I just got a ton of work. But it largely comes down to the fact my past reputation of not being that guy,
mm-hmm.
coupled with these people knowing me and knowing I would never deliberately go in and be like, man, you need to move aside, champ. I want this gig because I need it. That would never, no one I know would ever accuse me of that. And so talk about the organic thing, like, hey, man, you know, I rarely do this, but if you need someone, and man, it was incredible how much, I mean, the last 2 months are significantly different than they looked like in September.
Oh yeah.
It's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. But it still comes down to the approach.
Sincerity's the key, bro.
Amen. And I still, I rarely would go outside of my circles and approach people like that too. Because then it could be perceived with the best of intentions.
Right.
You know, I don't really know this drummer. I don't really know this band leader, but hey man, if you need somebody, that's pretty much going to be taken out of context or the wrong way more often than not.
John, you just mentioned something that we'll wrap this little section up with, mm-hmm. is that you were talking about people inside your circle. One thing I think that's also vital to the aspect of like sincere, ethical networking is be careful when you are in your circle, so to speak, that you, A, don't isolate yourself from everything else. Mm. And then B, also, man, how many times have we talked about and have other people talked about that there are certain little circles of people that have intentionally isolated themselves, and then that circle has kind of developed this mob mentality, so to speak, to where then they, as a group, participate in some sort of we can call it unethical or at least some sort of weird political type thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's really strange, man, but that happens. It happens quite often. So I would just...
Musicians.
Yeah, I would just say that more than anything, just... It's great to work within certain circles because you and I both have a really cool circle of folks that we work with and work with regularly. But, you know, you do have to make sure that you are incredibly sincere and nice and ethical to people outside of it, because being able to work outside of your circle speaks volumes to when you run into situations like that you ran into when you walked away from something not that long ago. So I think that's very good. Another thing, John, is that how many times have you either heard or talked to someone who talks about, man, in this business, it's all about who you know and not what you know? Well, there is a little bit of truth to that. But when you get to the very end game result, regardless, even if you do know somebody, once you get to that level of a gig, you still have to deliver.
That is the truth, man.
Yeah.
That's something that I think is overlooked a lot of times when we're talking about, you know, especially upper level gigs, good paying gigs, you know, established gigs, high profile gigs. Man, nobody, I'm sorry, but Stevie Wonder is not going to be like, ah, that's my nephew and, you know, he's not very good, but I'm going to take him. No. If you're not bringing it, sorry. You know, most of the time it's just not going to be the case. So when you get so hung up on, oh, the advantage that person had, right, we're like, well, you know, look, man, you know, I'm sorry, but if they're maintaining a gig, keeping a gig, that you can't really just lean on that. He only got this gig because he knows this person. I will say, in my 35 years of playing professionally, I can't remember auditioning in any cold,
right,
cattle call like way. It is, you know, it was all who you know and what the politics of, you know, friendship and circles and all that.
I think back to a show we did a year ago with Little John Roberts. And he was talking about he got that Janet Jackson gig back 20 plus years ago and never had to audition. He just got the gig, just went there and did it.
Mm-hmm.
And he even made, do you remember he made a remark? He goes, you guys can do this gig. He goes, of course you guys could do this gig, get in and do it. But the thing is like you said, at least he did have the connection. And when he got there, brother, did he deliver.
In droves.
John, one of the all-time greatest hits that musicians like to fall back on is negativity.
Mm.
Negativity and backbiting.
I've been guilty to the 10th degree.
All are. All of us are. It's a great coping tool, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, I like that gig the other night, man. I could have gone way dark on that and been frustrated. And I was like, why? I'm playing with my friends, and there's really no pressure here. It is what it is. It's not going to change. The only thing that would change is if I show my butt, I'll never get asked back. How about that?
There you go. You know, is it really worth complaining about the green room coffee's cold?
No.
As one of my students who's not a professional would say, hey, man, don't complain. At least you're not standing waist deep in a ditch. He works for the county.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that says something in itself, doesn't it?
Yes, sir.
You know, he would love to be in the green room with cold coffee and average food.
Yeah, it is like cancer, too. And that's something that I think we could be better as just people, to not be the fuel, the fire, and, you know, that fuels the fuel of the fire. What I'm trying to say is fueling the fire with that. Try to be more mindful of, you know, like someone digging a ditch. Think about these things. I've been through it, man. I've been dark as can be. And finding fault with everything, and there was no joy in it.
No.
It didn't change anything. It didn't make any gig better or a better gig come along. The only thing it did is made me miserable.
Right, and then hopefully you're looking for someone to commiserate with.
Oh, you always are.
You know, so you can cope, make each other feel better. You know, about, oh yeah, man, we're freaking living a horrible life with this. But let me tell you, like you said, it really doesn't do anything for you or for the group. That's for sure. I mean, as far as like the overall mood and just, some would even say volatility of band.
And I know there's a circumstance right now that you just, you can either choose to be a real problem or just try to keep it together and look to the future. That's real vague, but...
Have you ever been involved in a situation inside of a group, small group or even a large group, where there's a beef that happens between people?
Yeah, I've been in one.
Well, where these people, though, that let's say that you're not directly involved.
Right.
Okay. But they ask you or kind of intimate to you that they want you to take sides.
Mm. I'll avoid that like the plague for the most part.
You got to.
Although I've been in a situation where I was one of the beefers.
Yeah.
And I'm just trying to get everybody on my side. And that I'm not proud of that. It sucked. But, you know, I was justified in most of it too, though.
I know said beef. I'm going to go ahead and say right now that you were on in the right on that. I don't want to sit here and break my arm patting you on the back, you know, from that standpoint, but you were right on that.
Yeah, sometimes you got to just stand up for
what was right. That was actually what was right. But yeah, but then again, you know, I would tell you to run, sprint away from taking sides on that, because it's not going to serve anyone at all with that. And then you get into that whole topic also of like rumors. Oh my gosh, rumors are, like you said, talk about cancerous. Those things are awful, because those things are intentionally started to spread volatility within groups.
True.
And I mean, that if you want to get into that, man, you could even get into like these rumor mongers getting to the point of like intentionally starting or trying to create some sort of volatility or instability inside of a band to set themselves up to snake a gig. How about that? Brought that full
that's
circle.
That's ridiculous. My favorite is, and there's usually a guy in every band like, man, so-and-so's band is doing 120 gigs a year.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're probably doing 60.
Yeah, yeah.
But just run with it. Like, just make it. And then and just complain about it. And then you're sitting there like, and some people are going to be like, man, we only did 50. That stuff can get really out of control.
You know what another level of that is? And I know you know some people that have done this before. Have you ever talked to somebody that wants to make you think that they are way more plugged into a situation than they really are?
Oh, yeah.
You know? And they'll go, man, did you hear about this group? Man, they are having some issues, man, on the inside. These guys can't agree on, you know, the musical aspects of the gig. And now they're having problems with these other two guys over here because these guys are wanting more money than these other guys are.
Mm-hmm.
So just sit back and grab your popcorn and watch, man. Isn't that bizarre?
It's really sad. The pleasure that some people get in that, not only that, but just the fact that you think it's okay to just, you know, talk with some sort of false authority about a situation you have no idea about.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
And man, I'll hear people talk about like major touring groups that are like based out of England, you know, or based out of a foreign country, and they'll sit there and talk about it like they were on the phone with management yesterday. Did you hear these guys have beef, man? They're gonna call the entire tour off. It's amazing, man. Is it supposed to make me feel like that you're an insider?
Yeah, I think it's a big part of that. I heard a rumor about a drummer that worked for a superstar, and why it eventually went south. And, yeah. And it was sort of like, who cares? You know, like the person just wanted to say, like, man, I'm in.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but at the same time, there's some lessons to be learned in that sometimes too. Like, you know, maybe this drummer was a whiny, you know, complainer, and, you know, hey, don't be that. Because eventually someone might just say, enough. I don't care how good you are. Get out.
Well, that and you also, man, get to a point that people want to be right about certain things. To make you feel like that they know something on the inside that nobody else knows. And then even if this thing happens where they lose a drummer or lose a member or something, like, you find out that it's a way more milquetoast, mundane reason.
Yeah.
Than this sensational thing that this insider had.
That drummer had a problem sleeping on the bus, and he just eventually got to the point where his body was shutting down. But
yeah,
but no, he was sleeping with the singer's wife.
They kicked him off the tour bus out in the middle of North Dakota in February.
It was just brutal, cold-hearted.
John, one last thing I want to talk about is literal politics now. Most people are going to go, well, no, duh. You know, the things you don't talk about with family are like religion and politics, right? But, man, as soon as you say that, you look on social media, and you look at guys that we know that are 50 and 60 years old that will post these up-against-the-wall messages about their political leanings one way or the other. That blows my mind, dude.
Yeah. I'm not one to practice that. I think in some cases, some people just don't care. And the chips fall where they may. And, you know, if you can afford to do that, that's all right, man. It's not going to affect me. But it's something that I think you should be mindful of in your particular environment, especially. You know, like, I've seen political arguments inside of a band sometimes where it's like, oh man, that we could have avoided that altogether.
Absolutely.
And we're talking about rational people and respectful people, but it just had to go there. It's like, come on, man. And, you know, I think the other part of it too is a lot of it is awareness on our part. Like, I think I told you when I first moved here, you know, I came from up north, and it was almost like almost all musicians and creatives, for the most part, were like kind of leaned left. And you just sort of knew that, regardless of where you stand. Just in general, that was kind of the basic reality. You know, a lot more liberal-minded people in that. And when I moved to the South, that was a little bit different. Mm-hmm. There were more musicians who may have been conservative. And you can't just be running your mouth about this or that, and, you know, and expect it to be perfectly fine or the same, because it wasn't. You need to learn quickly the environment. And, you know, okay, if you're that passionate about politics that you don't care how it's going to affect you by screaming on the rooftop, you know, from the rooftops, that's all well and good. But if you're really, you know, wanting to be neutral and wanting to work and all that, maybe you need to be careful about it. Know your environment, know the people, if there's a band leader that's ultra conservative and you're wearing them out about Donald Trump, he might just get tired of you, you know? I mean, I don't know, just be careful.
How about this for a scenario? How about a young musician that is really looking for work and wanting to work, lands a cherry church gig, friends people on social media from the church, blah, 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 proceeds to post on his social media pages video clips of his death metal band with profanity-laced tirades between songs and flashing, like, pentagrams and all kinds of other questionable symbols and whatnot. Now, you say, well, that's just ridiculous. I'm here to tell you that if that's happened in situations that I've been involved with,
that's
right?
Pathetic. That's what that is.
it's just, you got to get your head out of your ass. How about that?
Yeah, that's not, there's just common sense here. You don't walk into the green room with church lady and start dropping F-bombs at it, you know. Like, just, know your environment.
Wearing a Slayer t-shirt.
Yeah, it's like, come on, man.
You know? Then again, that would be just as ridiculous, man, as wearing a MAGA hat to the Lilith Fair Festival. That's going to make 2017. Well, how about this? Does Lilith Fair even exist anymore? I don't think it does.
So it would be funny if it happened. The person would be standing there alone in the middle of the lawn at the shed with nobody around.
Yeah. The best part is that even if that didn't exist, I don't think you'd be standing there alone.
No, it'd probably be with a couple security guards.
Well, ultimately, with this entire last part of this topic, the global takeaway you should have about this, I don't care what you say to someone, whether it's posted on social media or straight to their face, the chance of you trying to convert them and change their mind is nil.
Forget it.
Just don't do it. Don't do it. And again, it sounds super common sense, doesn't it? But I'm here to tell you, you see it happening all the time.
I think you kind of summed it up earlier when you said, you know, you're not going to change their mind about their politics or their religion, but you might change their mind about you.
Boom.
And that is trouble.
That's big trouble, man.
Because whether it's justified or not, whether it's rational or not, you piss that person off.
Yeah.
You're going to pay. They're not.
If you voluntarily hang that out there, it's all on you. Nobody asks your opinion. You're just going to force that out there. Then, you know, if you're going to let the chips fall where they may, the chips might end up falling on you.
Correct. And they could be really, really heavy and break your toe and stuff, or your career, or your gig schedule for the next 3 months. Well, I don't know, man. It's just a really, really long-winded way of saying, shut up. Just shut up.
Yeah.
Just shut up.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you don't care, just shut up.
John, anything you want to add to this topic?
The only thing I want to add is genuine friendship, genuine respect, and just really being who you are is going to serve you way better than playing the game.
Yeah.
Man, you're going to get exposed on some level. People aren't stupid.
We know a lot of people who have.
Yeah, it's just like, man, just be honest. Be honest about who you are, what you can do. Don't take gigs you don't belong on. Don't gossip about people you don't know, or, you know, you have no idea about it. Man, I got stuff going on in my life that nobody knows about, other than a few people, man. Maybe I'm really cranky. Like, oh, that guy's just cranky. Well, you know, man, you don't know what's going on. You know, just be cool, man. Don't run your mouth about something when you are outside looking in.
Again, the takeaway from this entire thing is be ethical when it comes to, because you do have to deal with politics, if we want to call it that.
Yeah.
You do have to deal with it, but be ethical, be sincere. And if you do that, you're going to be better off than 90% of most other people.
Amen.
John, it's time for our segment for the day, and I'm going to be less than honest if I didn't say I've been looking forward to this since we did it the first time, which has been, man, I look back, it's been like freaking 6 weeks since we did this.
Really?
It's been like 6 weeks. We have so much stuff we have to get to.
Yeah.
But I am absolutely delighted to once again be a part of
this one. Actually, we have to be more low-end torque and more high-end horsepower. That way you can go down the track at 350 miles per hour.
Drummer's Weekly Groovecast Garage.
Oh, I love it. If nothing else, I like it so I can be sound man for the day.
You just like that you're able to insert that in there, and I wouldn't have a clue how.
Did I tell you how I did that little Drummer's Weekly Groovecast Garage? I just like set it normally into a microphone, you know, and then went and did like the pitch warp thing where I knocked it down like a like a major
sixth. You're telling a bunch of these young people it's okay to alter performances.
Listen to me. I did not say that
it's fake, man.
I didn't auto-tune it. I just brought the pitch down. I shouldn't say anything.
That's not auto-tune?
No, no, because the pitch was perfect. I just brought it down.
All right.
John, what do you have
for us
this week?
You should
have
just done it in the morning.
That's true, man. Or after I smoke a pack of Pall Malls.
Exactly.
So, John, what do you
Be
have
authentic,
today?
Bill.
What do you have today?
Sorry.
Oh, and let me tell you, this is another good one. Oh, I like this one a lot.
You always set it up for disappointment. Now, look, the trend in recent years, and it's a fabulous trend, is lighter hardware. And it really, really, I could not be happier about it because of the the reality is I'm aging and I need lighter hardware. So, you know, I like this trend.
Yeah.
But, you know, I still have in my working kit where I'm doing like multiple rooms and a lot of constructed stages in said rooms.
Mm-hmm.
I still like, you know, as much as I love my flat bass stuff and I love it. There's still certain settings and stages where I want a little more stability.
And let me go ahead and add to that whole thing where you talk about where you have a constructed stage, all right? A lot of times you and I both play these type of gigs where you will have like choreography and dancers and stuff that happen between, and that adds to the instability of these
yes.
stages. So I wanted to throw that out there for people that are listening also, that sometimes you just need that little extra spread and legs.
Yeah. So I kind of, hey. So I kind of, you know, I have in that particular, on that particular gig, I do a lot of that. You don't know what you're going to get. I use a nice single braced traditional tripod type stands. And, you know, like I love those Yamaha ones. There's some Pearl ones I use a bunch. DW has a nice one. Everybody's got a nice single brace, but sturdy, well-made stand. My issue is, I mean, it's, you know, they're not featherweight by any stretch, you know, and the way they're designed and what I like with, you know, the infinite, you know, tilter and all that stuff. You're putting a little weight on it. But I noticed most companies make their individual piping so long, it's mind-blowing. It's like you could have that stretched out at its max. You know, you might have a 12-foot stand. I mean, it's just bizarre how, and maybe not that much, but nonetheless, it's really, really...
Sure.
And I always, my stuff's so low, I don't need it. But anyway, I just came up with this thing, and a few other people have said since I brought it up, they do it. But I kind of rethink the length of that piping, the middle section, the you know,
mm-hmm.
and even to the point where, like, in certain stands, you can cut down the base piping even and reattach the...
like the coupling.
The coupling mm-hmm. there. So I get a pipe cutter. I do my math, make sure I'm not making it so short that it, you know, if I were to sell it, it's worthless. But I cut these pipes down. And man, like, say something's 2.5 feet long, which is absurd, but there's some that are really long. You know, I might cut it down a whole foot. And when you're talking about the entirety of a, hardware setup, you're talking about losing some weight there. And is it a lot? Maybe not. Is it going to be like your lightweight aluminum based flat stands? No, but you're still talking about bringing the weight down, and anything you can do to do, you know, bring weight down in a working kit is good. So that's my little tip this week.
Okay, so now I get to play interviewer
mm-hmm.
and ask you some questions about some things, because invariably listeners are going to want to know this. One, what kind of pipe cutter do you have, and is it readily available just at like hardware stores, plumbing supply?
Yes, and from experience, don't buy the cheaper ones.
Mm-hmm.
buy, you know, they have some that are like $8.95, and they, man, they're just buy the better. Like Rigid is a company that makes really good ones, and there's another company that's kind of black and red. Buy a better one.
Is it the one?
This is something you'll buy once if you buy a good one.
Is it the type of pipe cutter that you attach onto the pipe and then you essentially you tighten it up and spin it around the pipe, and then after a period of time, either it'll either break and fall off or you break it off.
Yeah, usually it'll kind of fall off. And the reason I like those is it's a real clean cut.
Yeah.
And all I'm really have to do is I go after I do it, I go back and I kind of bore out the inside just to make sure the burrs of that cut are gone. And then I file back a little bit around the outside circumference just to make it where, you know, you're not catching it on your hand or something.
Sounds like pulling it out. Somebody I know has had some experience with sawed-off shotguns, too.
That was another lifetime ago.
So do you also do that with a hat stand as well?
If it's a really long pipe, yeah, and sometimes a hat. I've had hi-hat stands where you could only go so low because that pipe was so long,
right?
And I'd cut that, and I'd be, you know, you got to, especially with a hi-hat stand, you got to be real careful about treating that, the inner pipe and all that, and making sure it's smooth because it's going down, mm-hmm. it's going over other components. Mm-hmm. So make sure you're mindful of your due diligence with filing out and smoothing out the in and outside of that pipe, the end of that pipe. But I do it on you know, I've done it on snare stands even, you know, like that's usually not a big problem. Snare stands are rarely needed.
Right. Do you ever chop thrones?
No, I never buy any that are choppable, so.
Right. You don't do the old Vinny trick from 1977.
No, I kind of feel like modern day thrones, as low as they'll go is as low as I probably need to be sitting anyway.
It's as low as anybody needs to be sitting, yeah. Unless you're 4'10".
Right. So that
which
that
is also my favorite shotgun.
That doesn't. And I buy good thrones, so altering them is not an option. You know, you don't want to potentially screw up. I use hydraulic ones. It's like I don't have any business getting in the middle of those.
Yeah, John, that was excellent, man.
Cool, man. No, it's just like I said. It's not going to just change your hardware bag to, you know, 50%, but it makes a difference.
Well, if you have three cymbal stands, hat stand, let's say those four things you chop, you would probably end up at least saving, wouldn't you say, 5 to 7 pounds?
I don't know. It depends. Sometimes it depends on the components remaining. Because some, you know, sometimes the tilter or the where like a, say, a straightaway hideaway boom thing is, that some of those can be real big and bulky and all that. So, you know, I'd hate to say, like, and I think it depends on the type of stand and what you're doing. Like a simple straight stand, you know, might not notice as much versus, you know, and sometimes it has to do with the quality of and the thickness of the piping too.
Virtually every one of our stands that's made now, aside from the flat base aluminum stuff, it's just steel, right?
Right. Yeah.
Just chrome plated steel.
There was a run of, I think Gibraltar did, where they did all aluminum, and it was kind of like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
But that didn't last very long, and I'm not sure why. Maybe it ends up getting dented up too easy.
I was going to say, it's got to be easily dentable.
Yeah, so you're throwing stuff in a bag, mm-hmm. you know, steel. I mean, I abuse my hardware when I'm packing up. I don't treat it gently. I mean, I'm not like laying it in there gently. I'm not throwing it from 10 feet either, but if it's aluminum, you could end up having problems. Yeah. If it bends, you know, it's not usable.
I'm going to say that this segment is going to end up being one of the most adored segments by our listeners. I already love it.
Just be careful not to cut it too short.
The segment or the stand?
Yes.
All right, folks.
Nobody wants to hear more about pipe cutting. Like, you know, like you got to just really get into detail.
How long's your pipe, John?
It's not what it used to be.
All right, folks. So listen, don't forget, get yourself over to iTunes. Leave us a short written review to be registered to win a brand new set of drum heads from Aquarian. Make our friend Chris Brady proud. He's a great dude. Second prize will win a full set of Aquarian drum kit tools. Just, again, do us a solid. Go over to iTunes, leave us a short written review. We'd appreciate it. And as always, reach out to us. You can find us on social media. Do not post political ramblings there.
Unless you don't care. It's all good.
You can find us on Facebook. We're at facebook.com/drummersweeklygroovecast. You can also tweet your vitriol to us at twitter.com/DWGroovecast. And then you can send your rhetoric to us at our traditional email account. We're at drummersweeklygroovecast@gmail.com. Much to John's chagrin, new shows come out every week, every Monday.
Stop with that.
Yes. All right. Stay in touch with us, folks. Again, head over to iTunes. We got that contest coming up in a couple of weeks where we're going to draw some winners. Until next Monday, we'll see you then.
Bye-bye.
Bye.